Coming up on AI Having a Clue,
we've got fresh new AI news for you. We're talking Wimbledon, four-day weeks, and Jennifer Aniston.
200 people have lost their jobs.
Wow.
They have. Over 200 people. At the heart of it, it isn't funny.
Oh, it is funny.
It is funny. Tell the story.
Utterly ridiculous.
James tackles another listener question.
There will be an AI act at Glastonbury in 2027.
Wow.
We're chatting to Tara Thompson on how we make AI inclusive.
That's profiling.
Yeah, 100%.
And it tracks what you touch. It doesn't track what you input.
Hello. Welcome to a brand new edition of AI Having a Clue, the podcast where we unpack artificial intelligence one mystery at a time. Hi, I'm George Butler, and you are?
I'm James Chanda, resident expert on this here podcast.
So if you're a resident expert, what am I a resident of?
You're the voice of the people, aren't you? You're the everyman.
The voice of the people just means a bit thick, really, doesn't it, in this context? Welcome, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. We are breaking down this crazy world of AI. It is changing so quickly. I feel like even since we've started this podcast, James, just several weeks later, AI is, there's more news stories than there was before we started. There's more talking points, there's more drama. It really is the fastest moving thing in the world right now.
And I think people haven't really made up their minds about how they feel about it. I think they're holding these two views. We said it in the very first episode. People are terrifically excited by its potential, but also a bit terrified about what it means for their job and what they do and ethics and all that sort of stuff.
And I think that's kind of encapsulated in some of the stuff that we've got coming up in this edition from AI in sport at Wimbledon. It's a big talking point. We're going to get onto that later. All the way through to AI and how it's being used in healthcare, and equally in a scary way and a very strange story we're going to touch on a little bit later, how AI is being used in phishing scams. So much AI-ness is infiltrating culture right now. It's hard to keep up. We've also got a brilliant question post-Glastonbury all about AI in music.
We should tell us about Glastonbury and, you know, NFI on the invite, but that's all right. It doesn't. I thought we did these things really planned together. I thought we were going to do Glastonbury. It's fine.
I did go. You could probably tell in my voice a little bit that I was there. It was great. I've never been before. Have you been?
I've been once years ago. So my experience would have been like nil pois for AI. But did you have any sort of AI infused adventures? Did it help you navigate things? Was it?
I think there was like a little bit of AI use in terms of kind of finding the right stages, how to kind of schedule all the artists you want to see. But I would say it was almost the anti-AI experience of like, this is about no phones and about disconnecting. And it was quite nice. It was quite nice to kind of actually strip tech, you be away from things. Signal was not amazing. No one had their laptops, their tablets, or barely even their phones out.
Wow.
And a couple of artists kind of commented on the fact that it was, I guess, refreshing that they were at gigs where phones aren't out and people are connecting in a human level. So yeah, I mean, it was really nice, actually. It was one of the nicer things about it. That said, we touched already upon a few kind of ways in which AI is enhancing tourism experiences, service industry stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do think it's a matter of time before we see it used. And I would be shocked if it wasn't used in things like predicting crowd control.
100%.
Probably looking into things of scheduling, how many people will turn up to each stage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It surely is right being used in that to kind of to make it a smoother process.
You would think so. I mean, a lot of the stuff I saw obviously looked absolutely epic. Shame the weather wasn't very nice for you, etc. but you know, lots of queues, closing stages off. Charlie XCX, I think, was sort of like packed hours before she's going to be on. AI must be able to play a role in trying to understand these things, how you schedule stuff, as you say, and weather as well. I mean, I remember us talking about something, a news story, where weather can be used to predict kind of 4 months out. So no doubt it'll play a role.
Yeah, I did see a couple of really naff AI-generated backing images. You know, artists that can't quite afford a brilliant, beautiful visual design, and they were just, you know, clearly had put in like AI, like rolling fields or something like that. It was a bit naff.
A challenge this week is
it's all about poetry.
Oh, that would be sort of rolling fields and guess the dodgy one at Glastonbury. You know,
Matty Healy was talking about on stage how he was a generational poet.
Right.
We'll find out if AI is, later in the show.
Very good.
Good segue, that,
yeah,
isn't
I like
it?
That.
We're moving on to news. I've ruined my segues now. I've got nothing better than that to go to. So let's just jump straight in. And we're going to start this week with Microsoft, who, James, they are claiming AI systems are better than doctors.
It's a big claim. They've unveiled that an AI system can outperform human doctors in diagnosing complex medical cases. It's said that when it's paired with OpenAI's latest model, its approach solved more than 8 in 10 case studies, specially chosen for a challenge that they came up with, whereas the practicing physicians, who didn't have any access to colleagues or to textbooks or to AI or anything like that, they only got a 2 out of 10 score.
So real doctors got 2 out of 10 versus an AI score of 8 out of 10. How valid is this study? That seems not particularly great from a kind of a human point of view.
I haven't seen it written up in any sort of profound medical journal as yet. This is Microsoft saying the important bit, I guess the question you would have is around jobs.
Yeah, what does it mean for human beings, or the doctors that spend 5, 6, 7 years of their lives training more to become, you know, professionals?
Yeah, I mean, interesting. Microsoft said the goal isn't to replace doctors, but to support them. So, you know, AI is brilliant, all the logical stuff, all the step-by-step process things. What it can't do is the human stuff, uncertainty, trust, empathy with patients, that sort of stuff. So they're saying the actual clinical use of this stuff might be a few years away. But again, it's an interesting story. Mm. Kind of raises the debate again.
I know someone actually who created an AI software initially created to help people have a better time at theme parks by looking at how they can avoid waiting in lines for a long time.
Mm.
That bit of kind of tech was then used to find the ideal kind of prescription usage for pharmaceuticals. So they took something built for like cutting lines at theme parks and put that bit of AI into pharmaceutical use. And apparently it's used, certainly in America, very, very commonly now. And obviously it just finds you the perfect levels of what you need.
So. Brilliant at pattern recognition. We've talked about this before. You know, putting together IKEA furniture, no. Patterns, yes.
Absolutely. But I definitely could do with help with my furniture. What's this chatter about AI and the 4-day work week, James?
Oh, this is good. So there's a sort of a groundswell of opinion that if you get productivity and you fuel it with AI, it could lead to shorter work weeks rather than having to get rid of people. So there's this big school of thought around the 4-day work week. There's actually a company based in the UK. They're a not-for-profit called 4-Day Week Global, imaginatively titled.
Yeah, that's what it says on the tin.
They've been piloting 4-day work weeks with over 60 UK companies over the past couple of years, and they have found that there is no difference whatsoever in terms of things like productivity. Most of those companies go on and keep the change permanent. There was a fascinating article on this which talked about a company called Convictional, who are using AI to, they're saying, cut hours, not corners. So they've basically moved to this 32-hour week. They haven't reduced any pay. Their CEO, and I thought this was really, really interesting, the thing that he said matters most to this company is human creativity, judgment, and emotional intelligence. None of those things are improved by getting people to work longer.
Do you think we would end up in a situation, though, where we're paid less if we're doing 4 days a week? And
this is the absolute beauty of it. It's 100% of the pay for whatever percent of the time that you're doing. So you're not changing people's pay. You're just identifying that there's a whole raft of stuff that probably AI can do for them. You know, you don't need them to work as long, but they're still highly motivated. They're still getting all that sort of stuff done. I just think it's such a better approach than thinking AI is just going to take jobs and you're just going to have to lay people off.
And what's in it for employers?
I think a couple of those things. You've got people that feel good about working for your company. They're probably less inclined to leave. They're more likely to stay. They get an extra day to do stuff that the kind of the company's given to them. It's for their well-being. It's a kind of softer metrics there. But as I say, you know, 60 companies choosing to do it, most of them going permanent with it. I mean, there's a method in the madness. And AI, again, I think having a positive role rather than people losing their jobs, which is often the stick that it is whacked with.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Right. James, if I said the Friends clap, what would you do?
Friends clap? Okay, this is some in jokey okay. thing.
Well, look.
I'm looking around at other people. Yeah. Hey, Molly's smiling. No,
does anyone else get that? Yeah? David gets it. Molly gets it. It's just on
just
you, James.
People clapping.
You clapped one to me.
I clap one too many times. Wait.
Oh, it's the intro music for Friends. Right, I'll be there for you.
James has got there eventually. Right. Okay. Your kind of slowness in getting to that point maybe would mean that you weren't so excited about becoming friends with Jennifer Aniston. Oh. However, gonna not laugh as you tell me this story because it isn't funny. It is a bit, but it isn't really funny. At the heart of it, it isn't funny.
Oh, it is funny.
It is funny, okay? I'm trying to be a good person.
This
tell
is
the story.
Utterly ridiculous. If I can get through talking about this, and the thing is that is entirely wasted on the brilliant listeners of this podcast is you can't see some of these measures which are just ludicrous. We're going to have to put them somewhere.
We'll put it on socials.
Paul Davis from Southampton was scammed out of 200 quid after believing
it's
he
also
was...
such a weird... you know, sometimes you get these stories where it's like, I lost £250,000. Paul lost 200 quid.
200 quid that he believed he was being messaged by none other than Friends superstar. Jennifer Aniston. The messages powered by AI deepfakes also impersonated Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Ellie Goulding, and others.
It's not, I know it's not funny, but you know what? For the sake of £200, if I was Paul, I would not mention this. Can I read a couple of the messages?
Yeah.
Paul saved this person in his phone as Jennifer 2.
Who's Jennifer 1? Identify yourself.
Oh, wow. Okay. So Jennifer 2 messaged Paul from Southampton about Apple gift cards, saying, what time will you send it to me, my love? Are you there, my love? My subscription is about to expire. Can you send me the $100 Apple card? And then with an AI-generated photo of Jennifer Aniston blowing Paul a kiss.
The currency's even wrong, Paul.
Yeah.
Paul, there's red flags everywhere, man.
All I would say is, could you look like it was more of an AI phishing scam?
It really should be. AI expert Dr. Jennifer Williams is quoted as saying these are classic phishing scams, but they've got this modern twist on them. So scammers are now leveraging AI. And this is what happens with all sorts of new technologies. It's often the people that are doing ill with these things that that progress far faster than anyone else. They're creating personas. They do it so that they can gain the trust of people like Paul from Southampton, and they end up requesting stuff. Things to watch out for: pixelated images, odd language, and emotional manipulation.
And Hollywood superstars messaging you. If any of you listening get a message from an A-lister, probably not them. Need a $100 gift card. But it's not funny. I know I know there's humour in this. It's not funny, though. And actually, for a lot of vulnerable people, this is going to be a real issue and concern. But, you know, I'd have thought Jennifer Aniston would have made decent money from all those Friends residuals. But anyway, let's move on now to something which has outraged the nation.
Wow.
AI has replaced a Wimbledon institution.
Wimbledon will be, and has been, I should say, replaced human line judges for the first time in its 148-year history. So they're trying to strike this balance between modernity and tradition. But the line judges, 300 in all, have been relieved of their duties. About 80 of them are going into new roles, I should say, as match assistants that are going to help the umpires. But yeah, effectively, AI is going to do the line calls rather than people.
We talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly in this podcast. I feel like this has got it all because it is 200 people have lost their jobs.
Wow.
They have. Over 200 people have lost their jobs, first up. Secondly, all right, there is a good element. The line calls are probably slightly more accurate. I would love to know the point of differentiation. I bet it's so minimal. I bet it's a percentage or two.
We're talking about big prize money here. Hundreds of thousands of pounds.
But also, Hawkeye was such a cool, fun element. You're losing that drama of a player going, I contest that call, and the whole crowd going, ooh, you lose that. And also, you lose tradition. You lose something which is a really beautiful part art of Wimbledon. Those line judges in their beautiful outfits that they wear, calling in a really stern voice. You're losing this brilliant thing. It's wrong. It's not right. There was no need. There was no issue with it. Who watched tennis? Who for the last 100 years have gone to Wimbledon and gone, I'm not enjoying the line judges there. Like, they've called it. It's never been an issue. No one had a problem with these line judges. This is AI replacing something that didn't need to be replaced.
This is, he's having his emoji bullet points. I think this is going to become a regular thing. Look, the bit that I guess has gone is, you know, this idea that you kind of challenge a call and you get some drama around it. But look, the thing it's eradicated is inaccuracy in elite level sport where you kind of expect them to get it right. I mean, there's no grey area here. It's either in or it's out. And a human is far more likely to get that wrong than AI.
How often were you watching Wimbledon and going, oh, they've got that one wrong?
Most of the time, yeah.
Oh, me, come on. They're so on it.
Screaming at the screen. In a unique Wimbledon twist, the calls are now using recordings of voices of staff from the All England Club, which is quite nice. My thinking actually went a bit further than this. I think it's a wasted opportunity. What if you could have, like, celeb voices doing it? So Royal Box, you could have David Beckham, yeah. Eddie Redmayne, Sue Barker, Laura Robson.
What you gain for accuracy, you lose in jeopardy and excitement. I think it's a loss. It's a loss for sport. It's a loss for drama. It's a loss for everybody. That's my view on it.
Can I leave you with one quote? The renowned deputy leader of reform, Richard Tice. We want our country back. We want Wimbledon line judges back. Enough is enough.
You've just killed me there, haven't you? Yeah. And on that note, we are moving on. It's time for this week's listener question. Thank you to Libby for sending this in. Libby's asked, off the back of a AI music artist, which you can find doing quite good numbers on Spotify. James, will AI be headlining Glastonbury anytime soon?
Maybe, I think is the honest.
Get out of town.
Well, look, I think what Libby might be referring to, there's this band that are doing crazy numbers on Spotify, the Velvet Sundowns. They're doing 500,000 monthly Spotify listeners in a matter of weeks. They are AI generated, so they're not real. No one can find anything about them. And to put it in context, that's probably more than some human bands who have got agents and big album deals and things like that. So from the context of, like, festival bookers like Glastonbury, they care about numbers, they care about streams, they're increasingly thinking about data. People like Glastonbury kind of like fame, they like infamy as well. And look, the kind of the debate around people like Kneecap and things like that. The other thing I would say is that Glastonbury is awash with things they do first. You think about Jay-Z was the first hip-hop artist to play a UK festival. They were the first festival to ban plastic bottles. They pushed for 50-50 gender splits. There's a whole rich tapestry of things that Glastonbury have done first. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they're the first festival ever to have an AI act.
What would that look like? A hologram or?
Well, this is where you get into it. I mean, you alluded to it at the start quite brilliantly. You know, festivals are real life experience. They're all about presence and connection and authenticity. And I can't really see AI doing that.
I suppose the closest thing to compare it to would be the ABBA Voyage experience, but obviously that is based and integrated off real life, human, beautiful music.
Yeah.
This is something completely different because it's completely generated. It's not taking something real and human and making it, you know, a modern experience. I think there might come a point where we just go, enough is enough on this. Like, I understand that some of this music actually might be quite good. I don't think as a society we're going to have a clamour for music made by an algorithm.
I think there's a place for it. Whether it will appear at Glastonbury, I don't know. I think the idea of an AI act replacing a human artist or band at Glastonbury is pretty unpalatable. Like, because you can't just add more, it's got to replace someone. I don't think we're kind of there yet. Will it be on the pyramid stage? It's a fallow year next year, isn't it? So it'll be 2027.
It's got 2 years to get going.
Probably won't be on the pyramid stage. I mean, there's a ton of other stages and a late night slot. I wouldn't be surprised. Wow. In fact, I will put my money where my mouth is. There will be an AI act at Glastonbury in 2027.
Wow. One man who disagrees with you, he certainly was on the pyramid stage just a matter of days ago, was Pulp frontman Jarvis Cocker. He had this to say about AI and music.
Someone had said, had asked me what I thought of AI and asked a question and said, you know, if you were going to do something with AI, what would you do? For some reason, the first idea that came into my mind was to use those photographs that were done for different class. And so I tried it myself. And as soon as I put the first one in, I realized that I didn't really have that much control over it. You know, even though I would, you type it in, like the black and white figure in the foreground remains still, the bus moves off behind him. But then when I put that in, it did this weird thing where the bus kind of slides towards me.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so I could have given up then, but I just thought, well, I'll carry on and see where it gets to. You can tamper with reality, you know, in a way. And there's been some kind of, you know, some people don't like the video because it uses AI. It's not going to disappear. You have to learn how to deal with that. And I don't know what the end result of it will be.
Jarvis is sounds kind of a bit confused on the whole topic, as many people are, kind of not knowing where to sit. Obviously, we a few weeks ago had Kimberly Wyatt from the Pussycat Dolls on the pod. She says she's using it to enhance what she does in music. So I see how it will be used as a tool. Why I'm going to put my money against you, James. I do not think in 2 years' time there will be an AI performer at Glastonbury.
First band I ever saw live, Pulp.
Really?
Yeah. Bournemouth International Centre.
You know, in 1960s.
That's a shame.
You can ask James a question if you fancy on any topic from Glastonbury all the way through to I had a lot of love for your answer about using faces on social media.
That was
in last week's episode if you missed that. If you have a question for James, do get in touch. Please email us aihammondtoglue@gmail.com or just go to any of our social media vids on LinkedIn, Instagram or TikTok and just leave us a comment. If you have a question, we'll get it on the show. Today's guest is someone who's on a mission to make AI feel less science fiction and more like second nature. Tara Thompson is an AI educator, speaker, and workshop wizard who's trained teams across the industry.
But Tara's work goes far beyond teaching tools. She's an advocate for inclusivity and a passionate voice in the neurodiversity space, using AI as a force for equity and empowerment. Whether she's mentoring women in AI or helping teams think more strategically, she always brings energy, empathy, and that all-important aha moment.
Tara, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to AI Having a Clue. Thank you for joining us. Now, you have said that AI has been a game changer for neurodivergent people, including your daughter and your friends. Can you touch upon how AI has maybe improved or changed your life and equally how it's helping people process and communicate in ways that before maybe weren't possible?
Yes, sure. Happy to speak about it. And thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege. How it's changed my life is that I can do more. I'm someone that likes to consume a lot of information. So seeing lots of big blocks of text is really helpful for me because then I can process it really quickly because my brain goes all these different directions. And that's kind of a bit different for some neurodivergent people who cannot deal with large blocks of text. And that's what my daughter will say to me. She'll say, there's a lot of text on here. Like, she's not going to read it. And how it changed her life is when I shared with her ChatGPT and especially the fact that she could use the audio function and talk.
Yeah.
Then she was like, this is different because she doesn't want to sit and type. How it's changed it is she can now take large blocks of text and just get it to, you know, tell her what's in the information that's in there without having to read it all. And then what's been really good about that is she'll do that and then she'll read it because she's got all the information, you know, ready. I realise I'm just putting her on blast, aren't I? But it's not, but it's not just her, it's other people as well.
So are there lots of kind of tools that AI are bringing to your professional life that is changing the kind of the game for communication in that sense?
There are millions of tools out there. Obviously, you've got the major ones, which is by Google or OpenAI. So you've got your Gemini, your ChatGPT, your Claude and so forth. And there are lots of smaller ones that are coming out. But you can just really run with one and just know how to prompt really well. I hear lots of people say, oh, Claude isn't good for this and ChatGPT isn't good for that. But if you know how to prompt, which means if you know how to ask somebody for help, if you know how to give an instruction and be clear, then you can use, you know, one tool to really help you. And for me, I'm a little bit of a I am a tech person, so I will touch and use as many as possible. Yeah. And some of them are just, they're just sort of like a layer on top of something that's already out there. But it has made a huge difference in how I communicate, how I show up at work. I can get to answers a lot quicker, but I will have to add one thing though. Mm. It is because I work in the area that I am a subject matter expert in. Mm. If you're not an expert in there, a lot of people seem to think, oh, well, I don't know anything about physics, but I can come on a podcast and talk about physics. I'll just ask ChatGPT. Yeah. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, it's not a sort of a shortcut suddenly.
Not at all.
To years worth of knowledge. Prompting, we hear lots of things about prompt engineering and this kind of new skill. Do you think particularly your daughter, young people, that's a skill they're going to kind of inherently learn, is how to just write brilliant prompts, whereas I guess our generation just didn't. We had things like Google search, which you ask in a different way.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Google search, because a lot of people don't know to use Boolean search, you know, using the different operators, and Google's been around for quite a while. When you use the word inherent, I don't think so. I think it's still a skill that has to be taught. But I always start off with having people just talk as you would normally. And once they become comfortable and see results from that, then I think it's a really good idea to learn some structured way of prompting. Even though AI is accessible, it's still tech. And if you're using certain symbols and syntaxes, which I don't talk about a lot, I just show them. I just put that there, and then they do it and they notice the difference in the results. So I think prompting, sometimes it's overhyped and sometimes it's underutilized.
One of the things which I don't think we are necessarily on top of, you know, as a society, but equally from a legal point of view, is to do with the privacy, to do with the ethical issues around AI. What do you think, from an everyday user perspective, we need to do to kind of help stay safe?
Yes, this is a really big topic that I'm really passionate about, because I'm someone who is always all in, and I was all in when it came to AI. And then I started to notice all these different tools popping up. You remember back in the day when it was, there's an app for that. Well, now there's an AI tool. Yeah. And then I said, let me just do some due diligence. There's lots of things around privacy in terms of conditions. But I have been known to just accept. Who has time to read all the terms and conditions and privacy? Yeah. And what do we want? We want convenience. Mm. But as I started to use AI more and more, and I train and teach on it, the ethical side became really important. And so I started reading. And I say reading, I got AI to help me read terms and conditions and to read the privacy policy. And for some reason, my favorite tool for that is Claude. So I will copy all of the terms and conditions, all of the privacy.
Which are vast often.
Yeah. Control A or Command A if you're on a Mac. And I'll paste it into Claude. And I've actually created a project so sort of like an area that where I've already given instructions. So I don't have to say anything. I just put red flags, ? And then it will work through and say what the red flags are.
And have you come across any big red flags in this?
Massive red flags. Like, yes. I won't mention any names because I'm actually speaking with one tool developer where I've said, I really like your tool, but can you sort this out, please? Wow. Because there's not even a way for me to kind of erase all my data. They're just doing it so badly. But I used to find that lots and lots of different tools had privacy issues. And then I started to look at what privacy and terms and conditions should be in there. And all tools, even the ones that you're probably using, have that problem, AI or not AI. So I decided to benchmark it against OpenAI's ChatGPT and Anthropic's Claude. They're not perfect, but they're the ones that I use. So I think if I use those and I'm happy with my privacy details with them, although I must put a caveat, don't put personal information and sensitive information into the AI tools, then any other tool that I use has got to either match or, you know, surpass them. So some of the things I've seen are, and one that I actually got featured in Forbes for, little humble brag, but I will do it because the way I got features was me just saying, hell no. So professional, right? And they're like, do you want to talk about that? And that was with, and I will mention and reference DeepSeek, when they came out on their app, they actually track your keystrokes. Now, some people said, oh, I don't care, it doesn't matter. And I'm like, that's profiling.
Yeah, 100%.
And it tracks what you touch. It doesn't track what you input. So if you type a lot of things in and then backspace to delete it, it's still got that information.
Yeah.
And if you're working for a company they can profile everyone that's using it and find out information about the company. What, you know, it's vast. Mm. So for me, it's really important to make sure that you're checking every tool that you're going to use.
That's scary. That can be tracked and is being tracked and no one really knows about it.
Tara knows about it and she's done something about it.
And I'm so pleased
she's our fearless fighter, yeah. Just fighting on the front line for us.
But we need to, I mean, it's good to be talking about this sort of stuff because I'm the sort of guy that would just be like, yeah, accept whatever. I just want to crack on with what I'm doing. But
even you, I mean, I love that copy and paste thing. Like even you could, like, everyone could do that with terms and conditions. Make it simple. Tell me like, so I can understand, break it into three things, red flags, whatever it might be. Like we can, I think it's a wonderful application. Myths, misconceptions, things you come up against, people that resist things with AI. What are some of those common things? I mean, you work with a whole bunch of teams across different industries. What sort of things do you run into?
I run into them saying, I can do it better.
As a human, I can do it better.
Yes,
right?
And my first run-in was a couple of years ago with copywriters. But a lot of people just say, I can do it better. But if you're looking at generative AI or AI as doing something better than you, then I think you might have a problem. So how are you using AI? I don't want to sit in a meeting and be with my head down taking notes. I want to be looking at you. I want to be taking it and everything that you're saying. So I'm going to use an AI note taker because that's going to take all the notes.
We talked about that before. It's interesting. Again. So if you go into a meeting, will you invite your kind of AI bot into the meeting with you?
Yes.
And what's the reaction that people tend to
I tend to ask for consent first. I think it's very important.
Nice. Yeah.
The more corporate they are, the more they don't want it. Okay. The entrepreneurs, it's very strange not to have an AI note taker in there.
Yeah, wow.
Does it always get it right? Not always. Mm. I've been known to be referred to as Sarah. Don't know why. I'm like, what? But it's really good. It's much better than it was, you know, 3 years ago. Yeah. And there are so many different tools out there to play around with.
We don't know where that data is being stored, what you might do afterwards, the level of accuracy. It's an interesting point around the corporate thing as well.
Yeah, really interesting. What about inclusivity? Because there seems to be quite a split opinion on this. Some people think that, you know, it's been written and developed by a lot of white blokes essentially and built on our past, which isn't always good. And some people equally think it's a really good thing for advancing inclusivity and changing the way that we look at the world. Where do you sit? What's your view?
I remember going to a conference and I walked in and was late and somebody said they had asked ChatGPT to give them an image of a CEO and on the screen, like massive, because we talk about it, but on the screen there was that, and I'll say the word typical, a typical white male. And she prompts it over and over again. And it kept coming up with the same results. So yes, the data that it's being trained on and those behind it, there is always going to be a bias. The good news is that, you know, underrepresented groups can get involved because AI is really inclusive in terms of it democratizes the information. So having more underrepresented, you know, groups of people involved in decision-making and development of AI, that's how we're going to be able to change the stereotypical.
How do we do that? Because we've talked about this on the show. You do look at like the leading figures, you know, right at the top with Sam Altman's and Elon Musk's and all that kind of stuff. Does tend to be a certain type of person. How do we do this?
You know, it's really, really simple because everybody thinks about those at the top. And whenever I'm talking about ethical AI, for example, and things that should be done, everybody starts talking about OpenAI and, you know, Anthropic, what they should do. But we are actually the users of the tools, right? You can go, you don't even have to have a login for ChatGPT. You can just start using it. So what I tend to say, and as someone who is on the speaker circuit quite a lot, I'll be asked to be on a panel and something, and I will ask the organisers who else is going to be there.
Yeah.
And one of the things I always hear is, oh, we couldn't find any women.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I can help you with that. There's a whole list.
Yeah.
So what I would ask is, if you are a white male, ask the same question.
Yeah. Yeah.
It shouldn't just be the marginalised groups or the underrepresented groups that are asking that question when they're going to take part in something. You know, we can all say, well, what's the diversity range? Because we want to hear women's voices, black people's voices, disabled people's voices in AI. And that's how we will be able to make AI more inclusive.
I feel like you've given us so much good stuff already in terms of top tips. Give us one to finish. Something you've come across you think people should use. One smart use of AI, one little hack, just a little morsel for us, if you please.
Yes. I would say whether you know how to prompt or not know how to prompt, if you are using any AI tool to have a chat, once you've got your response and you've gone, oh, that's golden, that's going to get me a promotion, or, you know, my complaint letter is going to go far, ask the tool, what did I miss? You know, if I were the person I'm sending it to, how would they view it? What gaps are there? We don't do that enough, but as humans, we do it. We don't walk into a meeting and someone says, oh, it's going to be like this. And we go, oh, okay. We go, there's a different perspective. There's a different way of looking at it. So as users, we have to be really responsible and poke holes in the response we get and not just go, oh, this is going to make me look so good.
What would you say to, especially maybe a kind of a younger person, about embracing their use of AI and bringing it into the application of their life and their career maybe?
You know, I don't like to do fear mongering, but the truth is you can't put Pandora back in its box, okay? And if you're not part of using AI, it means that as it evolves, you will not so much get left behind, but you won't understand as much. So even if you're someone who's like, it's not for me, listen, hear how other people are using it. Try and apply it to something. It doesn't even have to be a work thing. It can be the classic. I call it classic because everybody talks about it. Just take a photo of what's inside your fridge and say, you know, help me make dinner or something like that. I think that would be really important because the truth is when it comes to the workforce, it's integrated into, you know, most of the tools now. So you're not going to get away from it. So you might as well just understand it. It's there.
Wimbledon. Line judges have gone.
Oh, here we go.
AI technologies replaced them. Good thing, bad thing.
No.
I'm very much not sure it's needed. I don't think we needed to lose the line judges, the tradition, the culture of it. James is like, it's great. It's better for accuracy.
Brilliant.
Boring.
Boring.
It's boring. Like, who cares? The drama. The drama of the line calls of the challenging.
I was going to say, if I were on the player's side, then I would say, great. Glad it's happened.
Yeah.
But, if you're there for the drama and the entertainment, so...
It's always drama with you, George, isn't it? Always drama. Tara, amazing. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Tara. How good was Tara, James?
Awesome. I love that sort of self-critical thing of every problem. Because I think we all feel very pleased with ourselves when it gives us something we want. But to then ask it, what have I missed? See it from this other person. It's just sort of taking it further. She's pure common sense. And I think this sort of bundle of positive energy around it as well. I loved it. She was awesome.
We need to get her back on. I feel like there are more just everyday life hacks and tips that will really, you know, help everyone listening, help my life especially. You had one. Tara talked about taking a photo of the fridge.
Oh, yeah.
You had a tip for me. What was it?
Epicure, which is... So there's a whole bunch of AIs that you can use. You can put, like she said, you can take pictures of fridges. You can put ingredients in, tell it to create your recipe. This is just... like 1,000,000% better. So you select all the ingredients that you want to. It works out flavor profiles. You can put different things in. So what cuisine you want it. Are you eating it for breakfast? Are you eating it for dinner? Is it fine dining? Is it casual? Do you want it gluten-free? Do you want a sustainable thing? And it creates these original recipes for you.
Original, brand new.
Completely original. They could exist in the world somewhere, but it kind of creates them for these things. It gives you all of the macros, the nutrient thing that you need, you can tell it to be high protein, blah, 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 blah. The most important thing for me, it gives you an AI-generated picture of what it should look like. And that I'm all about that. Big Emily English fan over here, because I want to try and make it exactly like she makes it. So when I don't get the picture and you make a recipe, it just looks like a sort of a bowl of slop. Doesn't really do it for me. But
you're Epicure, eating with your eyes.
I am eating my... Epicure is sensational.
Okay. I will, in the next week... put it to the test. We'll cover it next week. Let's see how it goes.
Stick it on the WhatsApp group.
Stick it on the WhatsApp chat. Well, what a brilliant guest Tara was. And we look forward to having her back on if she would be so kind to join us once again. Right. Time now for the part of the podcast that keeps James up at night. Let's just remind people of the history of the AI challenge, because every week we have to determine what's real and what's human in a challenge beautifully set for us by our fantastic producer, Molly. Hey, Molly.
Hello.
Now, James, you went how many points up into the lead?
I can't.
Four is the answer to that question. Molly, would you please remind James the score right now?
At the moment, it's 4-3 to James.
Mm. Oh, imagine having a lead like that and bottling it, collapsing and folding like a cheap deck chair. It would be awful.
I think the bit I really care about in the podcast is probably sort of the integrity and the guests and that sort of stuff. I mean, this is just a frivolous
You weren't saying that 3 weeks ago when you were 4-0 up, but being one behind is no good to me. James is still in the lead. He might be sweating, but this could be the week that I go even, and I'm feeling positive. I'm feeling determined and focused. James, are you ready?
It's sort of hare and tortoise stuff. Yeah, of course I'm ready. I'm, you know, this is...
Well, pressure's on.
In that case, I guess we should pass over to what ChatGPT described as the world's greatest producer, but we have discussed it in the past. It's very sycophantic. So whatever Molly searches for, she gets. Hi, Molly.
Hello. So this week I've got some poetry for you guys.
Oh, wonderful.
One of these is second place at the National Poetry Competition.
Well, that's good because the winning piece last year was beautiful. And I look at it quite often.
It's back from 2024 and the Poetry Society ran this competition. And the other one is by ChatGPT, right, as usual.
Okay.
So I will read the first one. Under the tungsten street lamps, two boys are walking down the middle of the road. Two boys, no longer unsure of where their limbs are or what they might do, no longer afraid of what the world might do. One of them is carrying a fluorescent tube, its delicate glass shell yellow in the light. Who knows where they got it from or why they took it, but the boy who holds it, whose face is wide open, laughs and takes three rapid sideways steps and launches it like a javelin. And the three of us, the two boys and me watching from my bedroom window, see it arc into the sky and seem to pause mid-flight, as if perhaps it might never return to Earth.
Okay.
One didn't even rhyme. So if that got second place, I'm astounded. I'm going to enter next year.
I mean, let's say two, because I'm sort of with you, James, but we should probably hear both before we kind of delve into it. So Molly, would you be so kind as to read us, beautifully read, by the way, would you be so kind as to do number two?
Of course. On the windowsill, mid-July, a plant is forgetting itself. Stop it. Okay. This could be second place.
Sorry,
it could be.
So uncultured. Yeah. It's such a shame.
Its leaves curl inward, tight-lipped and brittle, each stem bowing slightly more to the silence of the room. Outside, the sun keeps pressing its thumb to the glass, day after day, and as the soil pulls in, dry as old paper, cracked like the back of a hand, too long in the heat. Once there was a voice here, a soft hum, a clatter of keys, fingers misting the air with care. Now only dust motes move, spinning in the stillness like tired ideas. Then one morning, the sound of a key, footsteps, a gasp, and water, sudden and cool, poured like an apology. It doesn't move, not yet, but deep in its roots, a slow remembering has begun.
So just to clarify, one of those was the second best poem written last year.
Yeah.
And one of them is...
They're like artsy poems, though.
I just don't think that's the issue, James. I'm not high...
Yeah, I was sort of, limericks, I think, is the extent of my thing. Not these sort of beautiful soliloquies of words.
Yeah, roses are red, violets, that's about where I'm at.
Not going to lie, I'd taken the cats back this week.
What are you thinking?
I've noticed this is your pattern.
Oh,
now.
Here we go. What are you thinking? Come on, Ed, what
I've
are you
noticed.
Thinking?
You're
in the lead. Tell us what you're thinking.
You'll do the anchor. I'm thinking the one that came second place, I think, is pretty clearly the second one. Number two.
Don't get me wrong, it had a bit of like rhyming in the second one. But I think if you asked AI to make you a poem, it would rhyme. Like the first one, it did feel clunky, but it had like a bit of an artsiness to it. So I'm going to say the first one's real. I think it felt, it did feel a bit clunky, but maybe it had a human element to it that the second didn't. So I'm going to say first, you're going to say second.
Yeah, just the pace and intuition. Intuition got me 4-0 up. Yeah. but well, you know, it's sort of suffered since. But yeah.
Last week we heard from David about the animals. He didn't have much success rate, despite being a cat owner.
Are you not poet laurate or something, sort of, David? That'd be.
Well, surprise, surprise! I've actually had a poem published in a book. Genuinely. Yeah,
what's the book?
Of course he
it
has.
Was when I was in primary school, and the poem is called "Louder Than," and it is about how loud my cat. Meows.
Oh my word, he's a cat. I told you he was a cat owner. We missed a huge trick and not having that as one of the real poems.
Yes, no, no. Oh should have.
There will be a sequel to
what
this.
Are we thinking? Bring
there will
the
be a sequel to
week.
This. Yeah, yeah, yeah. One or two, in a word.
I reckon one, yeah. Fluorescent tubing just has stuck in my head. Mm. And so okay, I'm going to go with one.
Okay, so let's just recap the situation. I think the first poem is the real one. James thinks the second poem is the real one. If I am right, we go level. You will hear me celebrate. If James is right, sadly, he extends his lead and goes 5-3 up. The pressure is on like never before. James is cracking, but is he broken? Molly, what is the result?
The result is, oh, George, you've only gone and done it.
Get in there!
No, no, no.
It's those fluorescent tubes.
Oh! Was it really? That was the real one. That won second prize.
Second prize by Matt Bernard.
It was, I have to admit, a little bit rubber. Sorry, Matt. Didn't enjoy it. But thank goodness that I'm level. I now know what Steven Gerrard felt like back in 2005 when he scored that goal and brought Liverpool level. I don't know if he actually was the one that scored the goal. But nonetheless, I am level, James. You're no longer leading. You have bottled it. How are you feeling?
Can we have those music ones again? I'm just going to go back and look at what we had. Get some music ones up. We could just stop the challenge now and just do something else here, couldn't we? Just call it a draw.
You're worried about losing,
aren't
you?
Call it a draw.
And I think on that note, I think we'll end the podcast on an extreme high. James, you've got a week to recover. Good luck. I'm going to be in your head rent-free all week. I love it. That is it for this week's episode of Eight I Haven't a Clue. A huge thank you to Tara Thompson for joining us. And of course, to you for listening.
If you've got a question, if you've got a weird AI story, if you've got a really hard question for me, I'll do my very best to answer it. Drop us an email, aihaven'taclue@gmail.com.
You've been doing pretty well, to be fair.
Yeah.
Not in the AI challenge, but in the question. Also, drop us a comment on the socials. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Lots of, I think, quite good content. You be the judge for yourself. Give us a follow. And of course, if you're enjoying this podcast, it would mean the world to us if you could subscribe, rate us, and share it with any friends or even AI bots that might
want to take literally anybody.
Thank you very much to Team AI Having a Clue, Molly Carter and David May. And we will catch you next time. And James, remember...
Stay curious.